This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Enterprise. At the heart of an organization is the conversations we have with each other. Conversations can either build our businesses up or tear down a lot of the hard work we have put in. Ultimately, what managers and leaders want or hope to achieve with a conversation is high performance. In our session today, Jeevan Sahadevan, the founder of Leverage Lab, guides us through these difficulties of creating high performance through specific types of conversations by sharing 7 powerful coaching conversations that any executive or leader can use immediately to create amazing performance. Of course, Jeevan joins us the first Monday of every month, and it's May already. Good morning, Jeevan. I get to see you-ish. Can you share with us how conversations are linked to high performance, or specifically, what types of conversations?
Yeah, so well, many factors can actually lead to high performance in an employee, from, for example, from strategy to remuneration or goals and objectives or the tactics you use or creating paradigm shifts in their mindset, all sorts of stuff. But at the core of high performance is the conversations we have with each other at work. This is at the core, and right smack at the core of any high performance you want to create in someone is the conversations that we have at work. So what I have is actually 7 coaching conversations here. There are all kinds of conversations you can have with your team, but these 7 coaching conversations very quickly can increase the performance in just about any kind of executive at any level of the organization. They're very powerful conversations, and the people listening, you could go as deep as you want with each of the conversations. And of course, I mean, you're not going to use all 7 at one go, but right. you'll fiddle around. You use the right conversation at the right place and that sort of thing. And you practice with it as well. And given, of course, given the challenges economically and psychologically that organizations are facing during these pandemic times, even more so are conversations critical right now at work. So this is a guide. This is a very good framework and a guide for people to speak empoweringly to each other to increase performance. And we're going to cut through right with all these 7 conversations.
Okay, so like the thing with also these conversations is sometimes like, is it better, it's always better face-to-face, right?
Well, in anything, I think face-to-face always wins hands down with any situation. However, with Zoom and you've got Zencast and you've got all these other apps out there, you it's still better than nothing. You know, it's still a lot better than nothing. But as far as possible, if you can get face-to-face with someone, you then benefit from their total reaction, from body language to facial reactions to everything else. Like one of the worst actually is actually a WhatsApp or an email conversation, because there's no emotions in there. So I tell people, if you're going to WhatsApp someone or email, use a lot of the all those little GIFs and everything else. I mean, that's at least, you know, they know your mood when you're sending a WhatsApp.
Yes, because when I communicate with you, I know I get a lot of nonsense from you. So
there you go.
So how much of the carrot or the stick should I use in my conversations to pick up performance? You know, what actually works better?
Okay, so this is a huge conversation. I mean, carrot and stick. Many organizations will tilt more towards the stick and, you know, punish. And the others will tilt more towards the carrot and, you know, praise, and all that sort of stuff. So which one is actually useful? The thing is, they both have their place. If an employee is extremely underperforming and causing a lot of trouble, you need the stick here. You can't motivate them out of the situation. You know, you need the stick. And on the other hand, if you look at children, for example. If you were to encourage and praise a child, their chances of studying harder is more likely than if you were to criticize or scold the child. You try praising the person, they'll work twice as hard, versus if you criticize or you scold. So it's the same with the organizations as well. If you were to genuinely praise, and the trick is to genuinely praise someone, they love that, and they love that recognition, so they work twice as hard, actually. So the carrot is actually really, really powerful, but it's often not used in its proper context, which is actually to recognize a person for what they've actually got right, rather than just to motivate or inspire, but to actually recognize them for what they got right. So it becomes really powerful when you do it that way. And of course, the stick, when people are truly messing up, then you really need to do that. So these conversations can play on either side of the fence, depending how you use it. So it can play on either side.
So are these conversations personality-driven, and should we take into consideration the different personalities you work with in choosing the conversations?
Not necessarily. What you want to really look at is the situation. So these conversations are very situational. So you look at the situation and then you see which is the best conversation you want to use for this particular situation, regardless of the types of personalities you're dealing with, whether you're dealing with dominant characters or you're dealing with influential people or stable characters or task-oriented people. You want to pay attention to the situation. Some of them you could tweak a little, whether a person is task-oriented or people-oriented. You can tweak the conversation a little bit, but essentially we're looking at the situation.
All right. Okay. And before we get into the conversations, right? Okay. Why are some conversations just so difficult to have with people?
That's an interesting one. The reason really is because of our perception. Sometimes you will perceive a person a certain way even before you have a conversation with them. And for example, if I ask you right now, just answer really quickly. I'll give you a question. The first thing that comes to your mind, okay? Microwave oven, good or bad?
Good.
Good. Why?
Convenience.
Yeah, so the lens you're putting on, the perception you're putting on is that of convenience. Right. Someone else right. says, oh, it's bad, you know, for health. You know, they put on a health lens. So the perception that you have, the lens that you're using can sometimes affect the kind of conversations that you have with the person. So what I'd say is look at the conversational strategy. Look at the 7 strategies that you got here and be aware of your perception when you're using it so you can have a much better conversation with someone. Because you see, it's good conversations are not hard to come by. If you can actually recognize your perceptions in advance, then you can start having very good conversations. You can, for example, you can say, okay, I know this person annoys me. However, they're good staff. You know, they're doing some good things. So I got to have a better conversation with them. You see, so that's a start. You know, at least you're recognizing your own perception. And that's not always easy.
I'm laughing because, you know, I have this conversation with you every month, you know, but I have to have this conversation. Okay, let's start with the first one.
Okay, so first conversation is active and inquiry conversations. Active inquiry conversations, basically this one. So every conversation, I'm going to give a purpose for the conversation and I'll give an exercise. So I'll give the people listening, they've got an exercise to work on immediately to access this conversation really quick. So active inquiry conversation, the purpose is to get a person to develop her own insights on how to handle a situation. So sometimes you know how you want to do something, but the thing is, you can't keep telling people what to do and how to do it. They've got to learn how to do this themselves. So active inquiry is a brilliant conversation that you can use to get a person to develop her own insights on, hey, this is how I should really do this, handle the situation. So there are 3 types of active inquiry. The first type is called a structured inquiry, where you provide a framework and then you work with the person using that framework. For example, a person says, I don't know how we're going to get more customers. Then you say, okay, look, more customers is made up of getting more leads and more conversion from the leads. So how could we get more leads? So you see, provided the structured framework, then you start the active inquiry process. So the active inquiry is where you're asking questions. Another one is a guided inquiry. So the second type of active inquiry conversation is a guided inquiry, where you walk them through, literally hold their hand through a process. You say, okay, I know you're doing it like this, but if we did this, what would happen? And you guide them through it. And the third type, which is quite powerful, is an open inquiry. So here, basically, you hit a person with very broad, thorough questions designed to open their mind. So I'm going to give you some examples of questions. So you'll see what active inquiry conversations actually look like. So essentially, the key is this. You're going to ask questions to get them thinking. So that's the key. So here's some examples of such questions. So 1, what do you see as the root cause of this issue? So that's an active inquiry. So now the guy's going to start thinking. So I'm asking John. So John, what do you see as the root cause of the issue? And then I listen to John's answer and then I can pick it up further from there. Another question, where would be a good place for us to start? Okay, I know this is a challenge right now. So where would be a good place for us to start? So now see, this person's developing their own insights here. They're thinking harder. Another question, what are 3 to 5 things we can do right now? What are 3 to 5 things we can do right now? So rather than start blaming people or making excuses, you go into an active inquiry. Another one, what is another way to approach this? You see, so in each of these questions, what I've done is I've opened up the person's mind and given them this resourcefulness within them to come up with answers. So this is what active inquiry does. So when you coach a person, an executive, you want to use active inquiry a lot. So you want them to see, because see, when you can tell a person that this is a better way to do it, but if the person sees it for themselves, then they own the method. So that's even more powerful. So active inquiry is very good for that. You know, you can see what would happen if you use fish curry powder instead of chicken curry powder.
Right. Yeah.
That changes the whole perception.
Sometimes we always tell people, don't come with the problems, come with the solution. People sometimes don't know the solution, right?
You need to guide them.
Or it's muddled in the head, right? And so it's basically, I think it's very cooperative. So when you ask that as well, because they're on the ground working, and then we both get to a point where we come to an answer that's thought through.
Yeah.
Right?
I've seen brilliant performance increases immediately when I do active inquiry conversation. For example, I've had cases where I would just ask a simple question and say, what do you think would happen if you did it this way? See, just something as simple as that, the person starts thinking, oh, I never thought of it like that, Jeevan. Yeah, you're right. You know, I should try it like that. You see, just something as simple as that. What would happen if you put a testimonial in your advertisement instead of just the ad? So, of course, I want them to put a testimonial in the ad. But now when I ask it as a question, active inquiry, they go, a testimonial? Yeah, I never thought of it like that. But actually, I could try. Let's see. See? So now they're owning the answer.
Right. Okay.
It's absolutely fascinating.
Right. Okay. We're going through the 7 coaching conversations for high performance with Jeevan Sadevan from Leverage Lab. We'll continue with the other coaching conversations in just a moment. You're listening to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Budding fresh ministers. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. It's the first Monday of the month. Jeevan Sadevan from Leverage Lab here. We're going through the 7 coaching conversations for high performance. We went through the first one. We're on to our second one.
Okay, so before we go to the second one, here's an exercise for those listening for the active inquiry conversation. It's a simple exercise. So basically, do an active inquiry with the marketing team on how to get past customers returning again. So get together with your marketing team and do an active inquiry conversation with each other on how to get past customers to return again. So this is a great exercise. So that's the first conversation, active inquiry conversation. Second, go homework. Yeah. So each of the conversation, there's homework for our listeners. Jeevan's giving them homework now. So yeah. Okay, let's go to the second one. So second conversation. So this is a nice one. Acknowledgement conversation. Now, what's the purpose here? So again, for each conversation, I'll tell you the purpose of the conversation, then I'll give you an exercise at the end. So the purpose of acknowledgement conversations is boosting morale by celebrating big and small wins. You see, one of the mistakes many leaders make or managers make is they only celebrate or push for the big wins. They don't celebrate the small ones, the milestones. So when you do acknowledgement conversations, you're doing that. Now, here's where we come back to your original question earlier when you said, do you look at a personality or do you look at the situation? Now, this one good way to increase the firepower of your acknowledgement conversation is acknowledge either a task or a person. So while it's a good situational conversation, look at the person. If the person is more task-oriented, then you can acknowledge the task they've done. If they're more people-oriented, you can acknowledge the person directly. For example, a task-oriented person, I would say something like this. This is a clever report. They love it. Because it's very tough, so that they created the report, you see. But if I told this to a people-oriented person, this is a clever report, and the person would say, yeah, I did it, because they're bringing it back to themselves. So I would have to say, you're really smart to have created a report like this. It's really hilarious. Like, you know, this is another example for people-oriented acknowledgement conversation. I notice you have an uncanny ability to spot these things. See, they love it. They absolutely love it. But the task-oriented person doesn't really care about that part. You know, it's looking at, what exactly, which are the 5 things I spotted that you really like? It's the task-oriented person. It's really funny, you know, when you do this. So, of course, while the situation calls for an acknowledgement, you can tweak it a little to task or a person. And it's really easy to see this. You know the people who are people-oriented and the people who are task-oriented, these two groups of people. So you can tweak it like that. You can tweak the conversation. Now, acknowledgement conversations really boost morale. And many businesses actually don't do it. Many bosses don't do it. And the only major key here is this: make sure it's true. You can't use it as a false motivational tool. You know, you can't go up to someone with say who horrible pink hair and say, I really want to acknowledge your pink hair. Really furniture, you can't really do that. You know, unless maybe you know that it really goes well, but you can't. So acknowledgement conversations are really powerful, and you could try that today. You know, Freya, you go back. work, you just acknowledge someone who's been working really hard and you know, could do with a little boost in morale. And I tell you, it sent them flying. This is an example of the carrot really, really boosting someone. It's really powerful. So here's an exercise for our listeners out there. Name two staff who could do with an acknowledgement of their work right now. Just write down the names of two staff who could do with an acknowledgement of their work right now. I mean, no one has really given the time to acknowledge these two people, and you're going to do it. You're going to do it, and the more public you do it, the better it is. So you see, so this is really powerful. Acknowledgement conversations, absolutely brilliant. I love them. Third one, recharging conversations. So what's a recharging conversation? The purpose of a recharging conversation is to get executives fired up again as they push for results or when motivation is low, especially now in times like this, pandemic times, you know, targets are not being hit, business is down, sales is down. So bosses need to have recharging conversations. This is to get all their executives fired up again as they push hard for results and not give up. You know, imagine your personal trainer having a recharging conversation with you when you want to give up and eat a cheesecake. So the purpose is to get people fired up. So here's some examples. What's possible if we get past this? So imagine asking this to an executive. What's possible if we get past this? And they go, oh, yeah, you know, you're right. Another one. Let's remind ourselves why we started this in the first place. This can recharge people like crazy. Let's remind ourselves why we pursued this goal in the first place. Another one. I know we're exhausted, but what can we achieve if we didn't quit and kept pushing ahead? So you see how powerful this is? So just with that entry-level statement, you can now have the full conversation. And it's really, really powerful, recharging conversations. And here's an exercise for everyone out there. Brainstorm with the team. This is an interesting exercise. Brainstorm with the team. What were the conversations you had with each other previously when you wanted to quit and you didn't? So brainstorm with the team. And previously, when you guys wanted to quit on something and you didn't quit, what were the conversations you had with each other? Write it down. You'll be very surprised. You'll notice those recharging conversations. It may come, it may have played out in all kinds of formats, but it's a beautiful conversation. So a lot of bosses need to have it, and a lot of leaders right now, you really got to do this with your not just your staff, but even with the entire business, even with your customers or your suppliers even, or you know, even on the media. You got to have recharging conversations. They're really powerful. Number four, now here's coming one of the stick conversations. Here's a stick conversation. Raising standards conversation. The purpose is when executives fall below your expectations, you can use this conversation to assert your expectations on them. So the key is this, yeah? Be clear on what your objectives are. So in the first place, you've got to be very clear what your objectives are, not your emotions, yeah? What your objectives are, be very clear what that is before you have a raising standards conversation, and never drift, never have one foot here, one foot there, sit on the fence. Be very clear, our objective is to do this and that's that. So for example, here are some samples of how you would have such a conversation. First one, I'm concerned that dash. So you just go up to the person and say, John, I'm concerned that, you see, this is already a raising standard conversation. Just that first three words, I'm concerned that, those three words already starts the standard going up. Another one, I'm upset with you because, see how strong that is? So that's actually quite strong. You're going straight in, you know, I'm upset with you because, and you're making it clear what the upset is. And so there's no assumption here. So again, your objectives are clear. Another one, moving forward, I want you to agree to dash. So again, you know, you don't want to deal with the drama and all that's been done, all the drama conversations all have been had. So now you're telling the team, guys, moving forward, I want you to, or you're telling the person, moving forward, I want you to agree to, and that's it. So the standards are immediately going up. You can't achieve big goals if you don't raise your standards. Here's another one. What three things can you all do right now to improve the situation? What three things can all of you or you all of you do right now to improve the situation? So again, if you notice the raising standards conversations, you're going hard and you're not beating around the bush, and it may feel confrontational, but you know what? There's a time and place for this. I find many organizations should have had this with the staff a long time ago and they never did, and the staff could cause a lot of damage in that organization. And you got to have this. A person is getting lazy or you know, I'm not bothered about their performance or the things they do that affects everybody else. You've got to have a raising standards conversation. And sometimes people are afraid of this. And I say, no, this is one of the tough conversations that you got to really get down to and practice as well. So here's an exercise for everybody. Identify two staff who could benefit from raising standards and create a script. So before you even talk to them, create a script so you know at least you can rehearse beforehand. So create a script. That's one of the tougher conversations to have. But again, you know, it's not all ice cream and roses, you know. You've got some of the tough ones too. Okay, so we've got number five, coaching conversation number five. Possibility conversations. I love this one. Possibility conversations. What's that? Now, the purpose of a possibility conversation is to change the focus from the problem to what's possible. Many people can point out a problem. And you know what? It doesn't take any genius to do that. Anyone can point out what's wrong.
Right.
But
right.
You know, what you really need are for people to point out what's possible. Sometimes the solution you may not know yet, but you can look at what's actually possible. So the key here is, one of the keys for this possibility conversation is sometimes before you even have this, you want to change a person's physical state during the conversation. Now, that helps tremendously. And let me give you an example. So when a client comes into my office, and sometimes I can see that they're really depressed or down about something. And if they're really down, before I do anything, the first thing I do is I change their physical state. I'll tell the guys, let's say the guy's named John. I said, John. And John says, Coach, I feel so horrible. I've had a horrible weekend, a horrible week, and blah, blah, blah. So I know John's in a very negative place at the moment. So the first thing I'll do is I'll change his state. I said, John, can you look up and count how many lights I have in the ceiling, on the ceiling? They go, huh, what? I said, just count the lights. Look up, count the lights. So John's like, just what's with my coach? You know, I'm quite eccentric. Yeah? So he's like, what's with my coach? So he starts counting all the lights on my ceiling. And I said, you notice you feel better immediately? He goes, yeah. Why, yeah? I said, because when you look up, you're accessing the visual cues. You're accessing the visual part of the brain. So then you start immediately feeling better. So when a person feels down, look at the word, feels down. Where do they look? They look down because they're accessing the kinesthetic. They're accessing the kinesthetic parts, the emotionalized parts of their brain and body. So that's why they look down. That's why the word is, I feel down. You see, no one ever says, I feel so up right now. So you see, so that's the thing. So it's very interesting, you know, that's why you see when a person does sadness, they have to do sadness. They've got to hunch their shoulders. They've got to look downwards. They've got to breathe slower and close their solar plexus. So they've got to do sadness, you know. So when you change a person's state, it's difficult to be in a negative state. For example, try being sad when you're skipping in a park. It's almost impossible, you know, because so state helps a lot with possibility. So when I do possibility conversations, I change state as well. I sometimes even make them move around a little bit or beat their chest or something. So here's some examples on how to do a possibility conversation. First one, what's great about this problem? Look at that. That question alone changes state. The person has a problem right now. Let's say the business lost their biggest customer ever in their history and they lost a customer. And then you ask the question, what's great about this problem? We lost our biggest customer. What's great about this problem? And straight away, your brain gets into a resourceful state. Rather than go into a complaining state, it gets into a resourceful state. Okay, what's great about this problem is that now we can increase our systems. We've become aware that we can't take our customers for granted. We can increase our customer service systems and things like that. So another question, what's not perfect yet? Okay, hey, we lost your big client. What's not perfect yet for us to lose the client? Third question, what would it look like when done? So if you did something, so what would it look like when done? So it's a possibility again. Another one, what's our habu of our resources? Habu stands for highest and best use. What's our highest and best use of our resources possibility again? Another one, are we getting everything we can out of all we've got? Are we really getting everything we can out of all we've got? So a huge amount of possibility happening here when you have these kind of conversations. Exercise for everyone. Pick a tough problem at work. And look at the possibilities available for a breakthrough together with your team. So pick a really difficult problem that everyone's facing at work right now and just sit down, you know, have a cup of coffee or something and you know, just look at the possibilities available for a breakthrough together with the team. And you'd be surprised how many there are when your brain starts getting into that gear. So possibility conversations, they're one of my favorites, actually. I really love it. A lot of our chats on BFM, actually, there's a lot of possibilities for businesses when they listen. We're actually opening up so much possibility for them when they're listening. So we tend to have a lot of possibility conversations, which is really amazing. Number six is ownership conversations. Now, the purpose of this one is to get executives to take ownership of their jobs, of their KPIs, of their functions. The three cancers that destroy success are blame, excuses, and denial. And the opposite of that is ownership and responsibility. So ownership conversations is getting people to move away from blame, move away from excuses, and move away from denial. So ownership conversations, how do you have them? Here are some examples. How can you ensure that from now on, you dash? See, you're now changing the question. For example, let's say you have a child who's done their SPM trial exam and they failed. and failed every subject. So your first reaction could be, you know, you might say, why did you fail? Or, you know, whose child are you? You know,
your father's child.
So that could be your first reaction. But what if you change the question? Instead of saying, why did you fail? Because you're asking them to give you an excuse. Why didn't you change the question to, how can you ensure from now on you get all C's or you get all B's? Now, then you keep quiet and you listen to the answer. So now they're going to take ownership. Men very often staff don't take ownership because the bosses don't let them. And that's interesting, you know. So when you ask the question, like, how can you ensure from now on you arrive early at work? So how can you ensure? You can't say, no, you've got to wake me up, boss. You're my alarm clock. No, it doesn't work like that. You know, so I can't go home and say, Frida, I had a long day. It's a very tough day, but I need to exercise. Can you do some push-ups on my behalf? No, that's never going to work. So here's another one. You know, what do you think is a better way? So again, get them to take ownership. How will you get it done by Monday? Getting them to take ownership again. What three things can you take ownership of? Now you're getting quite direct. So ownership conversation, truly beautiful. An exercise for everyone is identify 10 things at work that specific people need to take ownership of this quarter. So in this particular quarter of the year, what are 10 things at work that specific people need to take ownership of so that we can all make progress and hit our goals? You know, what are the 10 things? And you'd be surprised here what you come up with. It can be simple things like one person takes ownership of database generation. Another one takes ownership of conversion rates of the sales team, checking on all of that, and so on and so on. So number six is the ownership conversations. Very powerful. Now we come to number seven. Quite possibly one of the most powerful conversations out there, simply because it handles a problem or an issue indirectly rather than directly. But it's such a beautiful conversation. Number seven is what Hollywood is made out of. Okay. So number seven is, tell stories. So telling stories is one of the most powerful conversations you could ever have with a person, simply because all of us, our very DNA loves stories. You know, we all grew up with stories. You know, our parents told the stories, the movies, the cartoons, everything is a story. That's why Disney is doing so well, you know, with all its stories. So ask your question, Frida, Marvel or DC?
Marvel.
Marvel, why? Stories, right? So much drama, and you love the drama. There you got Thor, you know, losing his hammer, poor guy. One suffered with it and finally managed to get that, almost lost that as well, but you know, it's a poor chap. I mean, he had to go through all sorts of play things to get that new hammer. So, and then you got Captain America lifting it just when he thought he's the only one. I mean, Marvel does this. Meanwhile, in Disney, I don't know what it is. In DC, sorry. So there you go. It's just stories. Yeah. So the purpose is a powerful, non-confrontational way to completely change how an executive sees something. It's a powerful, non-confrontational way to change how an executive sees something. So now I will tell you a story shortly. But before I do that, let me tell you the types of stories that you can use. See, there are many types, but here are five interesting types of stories that you can use to really get a lot of messages across. The first one is turnaround stories. You can talk about how a company is turned around or how you turn around your life or how something was turned around, you know, when you didn't want to study for your SPM exam and then you sat down and you read the nota padat and you somehow got through, you know, 2 weeks before. That's a turnaround story of sorts.
Sounds like yours.
It is actually. So there you go. True story, you know. I was freaking out and I had to read all the nota padats and somehow I got through. So, you know, then the lesson there, don't study 2 weeks before the exam. The second one is embarrassing moments and how you overcame them. You know, how many of these do we have? Like, I give you one, an embarrassing moment and how I overcame them. So there was this WhatsApp. WhatsApp can be the death of me, I tell you, seriously. You know, WhatsApp sometimes auto-corrects your sentence as you send it out. And if you don't check it, you could get in all kinds of trouble. And I get myself in trouble all the time. So, for example, there was this one guy. And this guy, a friend of mine, we were going to meet for a coffee. And he's a very short guy and he's very insecure about his height. So he's just really insecure about it. So I told him, so I messaged him, said, I'm on the way. So I said, I see you shortly. And it became, shortly. So I didn't see that. And I sent it. I see you shortly. And I said it. Then when I showed up, he had the longest face ever. He was sweeping the floor with it. I said, what's wrong with this guy? He was, and I was like, what's wrong with this guy, man? Why is he? He was so happy before this. And he was talking and giving me one word answers. I'm like, are you okay? He said, I'm fine. I said, well, look, you were really fine earlier, but now. I said, look, I don't take easy to insults. And what insult did I give you? He said, you call me shorty. I said, what? Then I saw the WhatsApp. I said, I didn't. And the worst thing is I started laughing when he said it. So that didn't help, obviously. So I was laughing so much. I said, it's just WhatsApp. I blame WhatsApp. And then the guy realized that I made a mistake. And then he started laughing as well.
Okay.
It was really funny, man. Now I have the license to tease him about that, but it was just so funny. And it's the thing, you know, you don't even know. So there you go. That's an embarrassing moment and how I overcame it by being just truly honest. That's the second kind of story. Number three is a metaphor for a lesson, for a value. You know, you give a metaphor, you know, like you could talk about a lion, but it's a metaphor for something else, you know, about courage or something. So you can give a metaphor. Number four is an example of a value in action. So you tell a story and show how this value of hardworking, being hardworking is in action, or diligence or something like that. And the last one could be inspirational, motivational. That's a very nice story. So let me give you one, actually. I tell you stories. I mean, not many people know this story. So I must tell. So I often tell people that the kind of people you mix with really can impact your, not just your present, but your future as well. So you want to pay attention to who's in your inner circle. Bring good people into your inner circle. Mix regularly with really good, big thinking, empowering people, because it has a huge effect on you. So try to tell you a story. So in 1917, there were these two guys. They were ambulance drivers, and they were just about probably 18 years old. And both of them were very good friends, and both built billion-dollar businesses. Guess who these two are? And everyone knows them. I think I've told you the story before. But guess these two people. Everybody knows these two people. And the both of them are Walt Disney and Ray Kroc. Walt Disney, the guy who built Disney, and Ray Kroc, who built McDonald's, the McDonald's billion-dollar business. So you see, these guys were ambulance drivers, and they were friends. They were good friends. And can you imagine, they both influenced each other to think big. Part of me feels that if Walt Disney didn't know Ray Kroc, he may not have built Disney. If Ray Kroc didn't know Walt Disney, he may not have built McDonald's, because they influence each other. Like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, they influence each other all the time. So that's, you see, that's a powerful, inspirational story. Or you could say it's an example of a value in action, thinking big in action. So these are how you would use stories. So these five examples of stories are really powerful. So here's an exercise for everybody at home. Create a story and tell it. Create a story and tell it to your team. Use these three ingredients: touch, move, inspire, TMI. Make sure your story touches, moves, and inspires people, TMI. So touch, move, and inspire people. So these seven conversations, now, all of them, they stand alone and they're very potent and they're very powerful. All of them. You could start with the ones that you like and use that a lot, then start exploring the other conversations. Because I've had cases where a client says, coach, I'm not into possibility conversations. I don't think that's for me. Or they say, oh, you know, acknowledgement conversations are not for me. But you're missing out on the magic. You're missing out on the magic if you don't try out all of these seven conversations. They're truly brilliant, and you will have a really, really good quarter when you actually do it.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Jeevan Sadevan from Leverage Lab, talking about seven coaching conversations for high performance. He'll join us again the first Monday of next month. This is Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.